Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. And we're going to be talking about mind power in a perspective that I think you're going to find extremely interesting. We're also going to be discussing, I know, a man that you all have heard about, and his name is Nostradamus. We've all seen television programs, heard radio talks about this man of history, which has so much mystery surrounding him. Well, my guest today, Peter LeMessurier, is just absolutely an amazing individual because of what he has put in his new book, Nostradamus, Bibliomancer, The Man, The Myth, yes, and the Truth. Thank you for correcting me. Peter, welcome to the show. Are you there? Peter, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. I got as far as Nostradamus, but I didn't hear the bibliomancer bit.
Oh, okay, so that's fine. We might have a little bit of a time delay in our connection there. Peter, you're where right now? Where are you located? We're talking to you overseas.
I'm in Wales, more at the bottom left-hand corner of Great Britain.
All right. You have written many, many books on a lot of different subjects that fascinate people because they're considered mysteries. You are regarded as the leading English language expert on Nostradamus. You've written a lot of books about him, including the Nostradamus Encyclopedia and The Unknown Nostradamus and just Nostradamus, The Illustrated Prophecies. You have been invited by Nostradamus' hometown to speak there, and you have been on television in various productions, lots of radio programs, including the Discovery Channel, the History Channel, National Geographic Channel, and in the United Kingdom, your own Channel 4. What is it about Nostradamus that so captured your imagination that you have invested so much time, effort, and energy in research and have embarked into finishing this fourth book, Nostradamus Bibliomancer? What is it that drives you with curiosity?
Well, curiously enough, it wasn't curiosity originally. It was my agent saying, why don't you write a book on Nostradamus, given that I write books on a series of what you might call weirdo subjects like the Great Pyramid and so on and so forth. But what interested me really, originally I said no. I thought, well, he's some sort of maniac. And then realizing that he was writing in French verse, I thought, well, nobody's ever translated him into English verse. It's always English prose. So I thought, well, I'll just try the odd prophecy in English verse, and that seemed to work quite well. And then I did another one the next day, and it sort of became like doing a crossword a day, translating him into English verse. But when I did, I found that he was saying very different things from what people had normally been saying. And that prompted me to look further into him, into especially reading the French research, which, of course, not a lot of people in English-speaking countries have read, the French mm-hmm. being necessarily the experts. And you discover that what was happening was not what people had always thought was happening. So the latest book really is the culmination of that, realizing, for example, that he wasn't a doctor, he wasn't an astrologer, he wasn't a prophet, he said so himself on a number of occasions. So what was he doing? And we discovered, and it's not just me, that basically he was taking old prophecies and old events and projecting them into the future on the basis that history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. In the latest book, the idea was to try and find out exactly how he did that. And it looked as if the answer was bibliomancy, which was which is basically letting a book fall off a shelf, fall open as any old page, and using whatever hits you in the eye.
That is just such a very, very unique perspective. And having seen certain programs through the years regarding research into his background, when your book came to my attention, you brought out so much more information about this man that I thought was just absolutely wonderful. It's as if much of what has been promoted before was sort of a skimming over and a romanticizing of what he was not.
Absolutely.
And I just thought that was so intriguing. Let's talk a little bit about his family. Now, he was born, and I had to chuckle, the first sentence in your book is, the world-famous French seer, Michael Nostradam, was born in mid or late December 1503. Nobody's sure of the exact date. But here he is. He's been born in the south of France, and no one in a million years would have ever imagined that he would have become as famous as he did. He came, though, into really a family of size. He had seven brothers and a sister. That's a good-sized family.
That's right. Well, I think people tended to have large families at the time because not all of them were going to survive. I think all his did, but one way of making sure that as many survived as possible. It still happens in third world countries today, of course.
Oh, yes. I mean, that was a very prominent thing. Also, if people were involved in farming or in any kind of industry, the children were part of what enabled them to make a living because they...
Yeah, I don't think that happened in this case. I think, I suspect in this case his parents were fairly well off, or his father was fairly well off. He was a fairly prosperous merchant.
Mm-hmm.
So, but various of them became lawyers and landowners and that sort of thing.
Now, I found it interesting that his father had been of a Jewish background and had adopted a Christian name, which was not unusual when you think back to that time frame, because so many times those people of Jewish background, just to survive, had to pretend they were not. And
yes, this was his grandfather rather than his father, yes, and there was tremendous pressures on Jews at the time. I mean, in 1492,
mm-hmm.
they were all kicked out of Spain. His ancestors may well have been Jewish, Spanish Jews, I mean, Maranos,
mm-hmm.
as they were called. And even in France, there were huge pressures on them to become Christian. And when they did, they adopted a Christian name, that is more or less what the term means.
During the time that he was growing up, he was exposed to a lot of opportunity for education, as most young males were. Girls were not encouraged to learn. They were supposed to learn how to sew and look pretty and that type of thing. But the boys were encouraged to learn Latin, which is not unusual for that time frame. And he did that, and he had actually started into a university, but the plague hit, and this was towards the end of 1520. And you
talk about... This is Avignon, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
this
so
the,
he... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this is Avignon, of the famous Bridge of Avignon fame. And as you say, the plague came along probably before he completed, almost certainly before he completed his course, which had
mm-hmm.
an effect on the rest of his career.
Oh, very much so. And, you know, so many people died when the plague hit. Now, apparently, according to your research, Nostradamus set out to become an apothecary. Now, in that time frame, someone that was an apothecary, and I'm quoting from your book, it was considered a manual trade akin to that of a grocer, and no degree was required for
that.
That's
correct. Yeah.
But he had to do, nobody made any money either, but he had to serve an apprenticeship, and I was astonished at the length of the apprenticeship.
It depended on whether he was actually trained by a town apothecary, in which case it might take 5, 6, 7 years. But there was a special clause whereby if you were an apothecary of the poor or the plague, you could obtain your certificate, your diploma, at the end of 12 years, without actually doing any examinations. And although this can't be proved, the various circumstances that suggest that that may have been the route he took.
Now, he said that he really, and this is according to historical information that you have, that he spent his years from 1521 to 1529 really getting into exploring herbal medicines, how to take care of them, but he did something else too. He enrolled for a doctorate at a facility of medicine, and he ended up getting a certificate for that?
No. The first bit you said just now about spending all these years finding out about herbal remedies, he in fact says that himself. That's all in his own words. But then in 1529, he evidently decided he wanted to be a doctor. Perhaps he did all the time. But the thing is, because he hadn't completed his course at Avignon, he didn't have his first degree. Now, you know that to become a doctor, a doctorate is a second degree. You have to have your first degree first. He didn't have it. Quite what prompted him to do it, I don't know. But he applied at Montpellier, medical faculty there to become a doctor, and we have his written enrollment document in his own hand, and we also have his being kicked out because they discovered that he was just an apothecary, and apothecaries, as you say, were regarded as manual workers like surgeons, because the surgeon was simply the local barber. He had all the sharp instruments. The doctors were a bit snooty about this, and so he was kicked out of the medical faculty at Montpellier. And that's all the record we have of him at Montpellier. There's no record of him being readmitted or anything like this. And the two documents involved are both dated the same day.
You say that he spent the next 23 years after being expelled right on the outside fringes of the medical environment that was presiding at the time. And again, for those of you listening, you need to keep in mind, we're talking about the 1500s. You can't think in the mentality of today. You have to sort of slip back into time because of the way the hierarchy was, both in education as well as in profession. And just like you mentioned, the barbers were the surgeons, and that gives one to pause. But that's in our world today. In that time frame, that's what went on. And I think that's what makes part of your book so absolutely fascinating, because you're able to take us back into that time frame and, with your words, paint pictures of what was going on. And in our thinking of today, it's not easy. It is easier. Let me rephrase it. It's easier to go back into that point of time with a better understanding. When you were doing your research and you were doing your translations, did you find that there was a level of thinking that you had to get yourself into so that you wouldn't try to make it modern, what you were finding out in the way of information, that you were able to give the credibility to the actual time frame that he lived in?
This is certainly so. It's no use trying to read or translate or understand Nostradamus in our own terms. People are always trying to do that. You really have to get back to what they were concerned with at the time, how they lived at the time. And, of course, what they were concerned with at the time, it was a pretty awful time. There was plague, as we've already mentioned. There was war. There was famine, drought, disease. More or less the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And there was John Calvin, the Protestant leader in Geneva, who, to Catholics, and Nostradamus was a Catholic, was basically the Antichrist. So you had all the ingredients of the last times. Everybody thought the last times were about to happen. So everybody was trying to find out from Scripture, from various writings, how it was all going to pan out. Even Christopher Columbus at the time felt moved to put together a book of prophecies, although he never actually got it published. And this is more or less what Nostradamus was doing, trying to find out what was going to happen in the future. So what do? You look back to the past, because it was assumed that this was how you found out about the future. You could even say Nostradamus didn't believe in the future, which is a curious thing to say, but really what he believed in was a repetition of the past. So there you have the ingredients for what he came out with. And the big point about Nostradamus was other people had been doing this, but they'd done it in Latin and in Gothic script and with all sorts of scholastic abbreviations. But he was one of the first, actually, to put it into French. And as a result, he more or less got all the credit for it.
I was intrigued with his being appointed as public health supremo, yet he left writing saying that nothing that he used was any good. It was
That's right.
Not any better than nothing at all. And
that's what he said, yes.
And I find that just absolutely, totally, incredibly honest.
It was very honest of him, that's correct, yeah. And it puts to shame, really, some of the curious things that have been put out about him, especially on History Channel or Discovery Channel or whatever, since they are proposing things that he himself denied. He didn't claim to be a doctor, he didn't claim to be an astrologer, he didn't claim to be a prophet, and as you say, he admitted that even when he was working as an apothecary, his cures didn't work. Nothing could be done against the plague other than to try and stay clear of it. The standard recipe for doctors at the time when plague broke out, the standard prescription was get out fast, stay well away, and come back late.
Right, everybody will have died off, and there won't be the bug around because it doesn't have any hope. Right, and so what you have then is a situation because he stayed in the environment. Now, he was not affected by the plague himself, but because
he seems to be convinced that he was immune, yes, which is quite something.
Yes, and so he didn't get it, and he was going around trying to help people to the best of his capacity.
He was also going around trying to pick up a pretty penny or two.
Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. There was a financial side as well. And, you know, that he was honest about saying there was nothing I did that made any difference. I mean, this just had to run its course. Eventually, those people that had immunity survived. Those that did not were dead. And the plague, just like the common cold, once it's run its route, if it doesn't have anything to feed on, it goes away until the next opportunity.
And the people who survived were suitably grateful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, at the age of 45, what started happening to Nostradamus? Because this, in that time frame, would have been considered being close to being elderly. Am I right?
That's right, yes. So anything was going to do then, he had to get on with pretty fast.
So what happened with him? I know that he ended up getting married, and what happened after that?
Well, he got married for the second time, in fact, because his last family had died, and possibly it was the plague. What was going on at the time was quite a flourishing trade in annual almanacs. They were being published all over Europe. You have a farmer's almanac, I believe, in the States.
Yes, we do.
More or less, not merely listing the various festivals of the year and saying when it was a good time to get married and that sort of thing. Also trying to predict the weather, because they didn't have a weather forecasting service at the time. So people were bringing out these almanacs, and they were sold on the streets at the November fairs all over Europe, including Frankfurt. And Nostradamus was among them, and his sold pretty well because he had quite a good technique of saying everything in such a vague form that it could mean almost anything. And the first one was a success, so he carried on one a year, sometimes two a year, sometimes three a year, sometimes saying quite different things. And that's what seems to have been the way he made his money for the rest of his life. And certainly he died pretty rich. He was worth about $300,000 when he died. So he was on to a good thing.
Yes, he was. Now, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 children. Did they survive?
Right. Yeah. Yes, they all survived, but none of them, so far as we know, well, the name wasn't passed on, put it that way. One or two of them had children, but they were daughters.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, with him, it's interesting. Of course, it reminds me of a lot of what goes on today. He was really criticized strongly by the Catholic Church for being a Protestant. And then he was criticized by the Protestants for being Jewish. And he was accused for being in league with the devil. And the astrologers weren't happy with him. And the brilliant writers of the day weren't happy with him. Yet this man ended up becoming absolutely the man of history for the future. And this mystery man, how did that occur? I mean, there's a lot of people that would give their right teeth to have that kind of a legacy. I don't think he expected anything to survive.
Yes, well, that was, once again, his gift for saying things in a vague form. He was writing verse for a start, so you never quite say what you mean in verse. And he wrote things in such a way that people could interpret, not even in his almanacs, but later on when he decided to write a set of prophecies for the future of the world. He wrote it in such a way that you could make it mean almost anything. And, of course, that's what today's Notre Dame's industry thrives on. He's made to predict the end of the world, Hitler, Napoleon, the crash, the 2012 and all this. He didn't say anything of the kind, but he did write in such a vague way that you could pick bits of what he wrote and say, oh, this obviously refers to whatever it is, oblivious of the fact that it had referred to similar things in the past and would no doubt refer to other things in the future. He was quite clever like that, and that really is the reason why he became so famous.
There are so many prophetic myths that you point out in your book, and you say there are possibly more unfounded biographical myths about Nostradamus than about any other figure known to history. And I was just stunned. I absolutely was stunned that he was supposed to be this descendant of some Israeli tribe and that his grandparents had been part of a court. They were former physicians. I mean, it was just amazing to me. Even something where he was buried standing up. Where does this stuff come from?
Well, of course, it snowballed. A lot of it was oral rumors going around. Then other people later on took the rumor and made it a fact. And then somebody thought, well, if he did that, he must have done something else. This happens with any famous figure. I mean, take Winston Churchill, all the various things that he is supposed to have. Look at George Bush, all the things he is supposed to have said. I mean, he said some pretty silly things, but I'm sure he didn't say all of them. It happens to any great figure, and him in particular, because he had this air of mystery about him. So, rather like his prophecies, you could make almost anything happen in retrospect.
You said he had a secretary, Chavigny?
Chavigny.
Yes. Tell us about him, because apparently he had a lot to do with beginning this myth or popularity, maybe that's a better word, that continues to this day.
Yeah, he more or less started the ball rolling. He didn't join Nostradamus until about 5 years before Nostradamus died. He was quite a young man. He obviously adored Nostradamus. I don't know why particularly, but it may have been the prophecy side of it, but certainly he got very keen on it. And in the 1590s, he started writing his own books based on Nostradamus' writings, designed to prove that he had been right. Now, once you get into your head that you want the fellow to have been right, naturally you start making slight adjustments to what he wrote to make sure it was right. And he actually did that. We know he did this in the case of some of his writings. He altered the odd word here and there, changed a couple of lines just to make him seem right. And that particular side of it went on from there on. When editors edited his book, they would leave out the odd comma, put in the odd apostrophe, and eventually change the odd word to try and make Nostradamus say what they wanted him to have said. I sometimes put it in the form, Nostradamus predicted whatever has happened.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I find it so fascinating because that happens over and over and over again with historical documentation. And I can think of a number of situations where certain persons have been perhaps quite successful and they left a legacy, and those that were the caretakers for the legacy said, we can't have this stuff. No, that's not romantic enough, or we've got to adjust it. And then the next thing you know, I'm thinking of one person, when you read his original printed item and you compare it with what's being printed under the same title today, it's amazing the difference.
Yeah,
entire
absolutely.
Chapters were left out. So this is something that's very significant.
That's it. And bear in mind, too, that even the printing at the time was unreliable. There was no set system of spelling. The person, the compositor, the person putting the print together, probably didn't even see the text. It was dictated to him by an apprentice who had problems reading Nostradamus's writing, which was pretty awful anyway. So even the original words aren't necessarily as Nostradamus wanted them to be, especially when it's an unfamiliar place name, for example. The compositor just put it together as best he could. And your best plan, if you want to find out what the original was, is to read it aloud. Because if you read it aloud, the sounds that are coming out are more or less the ones that the apprentice was actually saying, even though he probably couldn't read what was there. So there's a whole nest of problems there which you have to work backwards through to get at what the original was.
You have a CD that is with the book, and this has information about the three original editions.
They are, in fact, on it. You can actually see for yourself what the original words were. So I don't want anybody to take anything on trust. You can see the original editions. You can see some of the criticisms of his work. You can compare the 1555 edition with the 1668 edition, where you can actually see one or two words that have been changed.
Now, let me ask you this. How has this affected your thinking and your research perspective, having done so much work on this man who has been in so many ways misrepresented and misinterpreted? For you as a professional researcher and historian, what did this give you? What did you gain, and what do you still gain from doing the research on this very famous man?
Well, what tends to happen, if you read most of the experts on any mysterious subject such as this, is that the more they research, the less mysterious it becomes. What I'm doing, you might think I'm just debunking Nostradamus. I'm not. I'm trying to represent him as he was. If anybody is being debunked, it's all the people who are spreading the unfounded rumors about him, and there are many of those. Like most researchers, becoming more skeptical though of the myths rather than necessarily of the man. All you can do is find out the facts about the man and present them as best you can.
Amazing. Now, what is your website? I know we're getting close to running out of time.
I don't have a website. I used to, but I'm not running one currently. But to anybody who wants to find out about the book, which is called Nostradamus Bibliomancer, which is an unfamiliar word, I know that because I invented it. Bibliomancer. Nostradamus Bibliomancer. You can Google that, and it'll immediately come up with various Amazon sites, for example, where you can see reviews of it and that sort of thing.
And Peter LeMessurier is my guest today, but let me spell his last name because you could also check this out on the Internet, and all my listeners are very savvy with that. It's Peter, L-E-M, like Mary, E-S, like Sam, U, R, like Robert, I-E, R, like Robert, Peter LeMessurier. And Peter, I'm just so delighted we've had this chance to chat. It is just, your book is amazing, and with the CD that goes with it, all of the centuries of quotes that he gave, century 1 through, 9, I believe, here?
Goes up to 10, yeah.
Goes up to 10. And there's just so much here for someone that might be interested in doing this kind of research. You have just prepared some material here that's fascinating to read. And
well,
thank
boy, you for your comments.
It would make for a great panel discussion, I'll tell you.
There we are.
It's terrific. It's marvelous.
Panel discussion might produce more heat than light, I'm afraid, but there we are.
Well, that's interesting. If it creates an opportunity to make a person question, because many times there are those that say they're the experts, but they've really shifted things around. And I find this just absolutely wonderful. Beautifully designed, good information. Peter, thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule and being with me. You have a delightful evening now. I know it's late. What is it, about midnight where you are?
It's about 11:30, yep.
11:30. Mm-hmm. Well, my friend, take care, be well, and I look forward to your next book.
All the best, and you're welcome.
Thank you, Peter. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Look up Nostradamus, the man, the math, the myth, the truth. Now, that's the subtitle. Bibliomancer is the term that Peter invented, and the information will really amaze you if you're a Nostradamus fan. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Fascinating stuff, isn't it, about Nostradamus? Now, I do know we've got a caller waiting, but for those of you that perhaps have just tuned in, the telephone number to call in to, if you would like to touch bases with me, is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, before I go to the caller, I do want to let you know who our guests are going to be for the remaining part of the week. Now, tomorrow, which is a holiday, as we are going to be talking dogs. Yes, Bridging Species by Robin Fritz. She has such a good sense of humor about animals. They just have made such an impact on her life, and this is a wonderful book. And then on Friday, this is a show I would hope that you really would tune into because it has to do with health. Stealth Germs in Your Body. Dr. Erno Daniel is going to be with me. This is one of the finest publications I have come across to date about viruses and bacteria. And I don't know about your neck of the woods, but out here in the Pacific Northwest, I have gotten so many comments from different people about getting hit with a cold virus that is just knocking them for a loop. Now, the thing is, you make sure you eat, drink, and, you know, stay hydrated, and it's highly contagious. Well, colds always have been highly contagious, and they like to change their structure many times. So this is something where being educated about these things can make a difference. Now, this is not just about the common cold. This is about how viruses and bacteria may be at the basis for a lot of diseases. Now, this is not new information, but sometimes it takes a while for the medical world to change their mind. So we're going to be talking about that on Friday. Good stuff. We've got a wonderful lineup of guests. You know, if you want to find out who's coming on the Donna Sebo Show, just come into BBS Radio, just like you usually do. Go to Station 1, the Donna Sebo Show, and find out about show information. Everything is listed there for you. Not in a heck of a lot of detail, but it's enough to let you know about the people that are going to be on air with me. And it's good because it gives you an insight into what's coming up. So maybe, if nothing else, if you don't have a chance to listen, you can pull up an archive and listen to it that way. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. We have a caller that's been waiting very patiently. Let's go to that phone line, first name or initial, and where are you calling from, please? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. It's Pat in Connecticut.
Well, hi, Pat in Connecticut. How are you doing there? All the leaves off the trees yet?
All the leaves. Well, actually, we still have some that are beautiful, and, you know, we got hit with that cold here, too.
Ah, so it's in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
It's a doozy.
Yeah, and a lot of talk about it.
Right, and
being
the biggest thing is with it, to make sure you don't pass it along to other people. So stay at home. So many of us who are hard workers, we're just croaking, we're miserable. We look worse than a NyQuil commercial, and we're going to go out and be the martyr. We're going to, you know, work anyway and make everybody else sick. Don't do that. Don't go to dinner parties. Don't be in a pity pot about yourself. Stay in bed. Stay away from people, because this stuff is highly, highly contagious. And that'll enable you to get well quicker. I mean, it hit me this past weekend, and I feel very fortunate that I was able to get through it over a weekend. But it's not fun. It's very humbling. I've said that to people. You get humbled real fast by a simple cold.
Yes, you can.
Well, what can I do for you, Pat?
Well, you have been helping me and guiding me with adopting dogs, and it looked like the last one would work. You had mentioned she was really going to be high energy, and they finally called. They were hesitating, thinking I'd be upset, but they decided she might be too high energy for me, and I said, as long as she's safe now and you're going to get her a good home, that's my priority. So I'm about to say yes to another coonhound mix, a two-year-old male named Scrappy, and he can be delivered tomorrow. I just would like to ask you, can you check in on his temperament? If he'll be okay around cats. I don't have them, but my sister does. And just anything you pick up.
How old is Scrappy?
I think he's literally 2 in a few days.
Okay, 2 years old. All right.
Yeah.
Scrappy, to me, is a clown. Whoever named him really gave him the right name. Now, he has got a wonderful personality, but he's not been disciplined. So when you get Scrappy, you need to understand that he is going to be an extremely loving dog. And being a two-year-old, he's not of a real big size, but you're going to enjoy having Scrappy. But you've got to make sure that you work with someone and keep him in a positioning where maybe he has like an enclosure where he can keep his eye on you. He doesn't like not seeing whoever's going to be his owner. And once he chooses you, that's it. He's a shadow. He's going to go everywhere you go. He's going to know everything about everybody. He is Mr. Nosy. When it comes to the cats, I think I would not take him over to your sister's in the first two or three months that you have him. I'd recommend that you do is discipline him. You must take him in for doggy training, because he needs to know. He's so full of himself. He's really a clown. He's just got this wonderful I look at this happy, smiling face, and it's like he's sitting there and he's just saying, gee, I just got so much love. Don't you just love having me around here? And you're just looking at some cups that have crashed on the floor and you're thinking, what do I do with this dog? He is absolutely nothing but total love. But you must be responsible and be sure that when you have him, that you talk to the people that are bringing him over and say, I need to have some time with this dog. Let's interact, but don't put anything like china or anything that could break out. It's sort of like bringing home, you know, a two-year-old baby that's learning how to walk. And that's what you need to remember. You have to baby-proof or puppy-proof your house, even though he's 2 years old.
Okay.
And then you need to put him, you need to go with him through training, and you're not going to like this, but you may have to go through the training 3 times.
Whoa.
Because he's just this big, big-hearted dog. He is just, he reminds me of a little clown. So you're going to need to remember, this is a dog that's going to need to be walked, that's going to need to be socialized, and you're going to have to be very, very firm and consistent. And it's not your typical patterning with animals, but you're going to need to do this with him.
Yep.
Because you're getting him at two. So you need the
support
for that. But don't introduce him to the cats until after you've had him for about 3 months. You need that bond. You need that sense of trust. And then I would talk to your sister. And if her cats, which I'm assuming she would have them, just roaming, you know, freely around everywhere, which is what I would expect would be the case.
Yes.
You need to be able to have him around perhaps some other cats or kittens. And he's going to love to play. But I guarantee you, one of her cats is not going to be one of those cute playthings. It's like she'd just go and go whop right across his snout. And that happened to him once, and he won't forget it.
Yeah, that's good. Okay.
So, but he won't be nice to that cat. No, he will not. If that cat digs her claws into his face, into his snout, believe me, he's going to waylay her. So you just need to understand something. You're getting a dog for you, not for your sister.
Okay.
But this is a dog that is going to be a marvelous companion. It's going to force you to get exercise.
Yep.
You're going to have to move with this dog. Not run, but move. But you've got to go through the training classes. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable. The animal's going to just absolutely fall in love with you and will be just loyal to you. And then you're going to say, I'm sorry, I can't manage him. So you really need to think and to be willing to make that kind of a commitment, because this is a wonderful dog.
You mentioned that with the last dog. You said, you know, get a friend to help you. And I thought, I'm not going to find a friend to do this. But I went to the Yellow Pages and I actually found a trainer that takes a dog for 10 days and then trains me. And that sounds really good.
Well, I'll tell you need the training. Because this is a dog that, like I said, to me, he was appropriately named. He's named Scrappy. And Scrappy just is as mischievous as he can be. He is a clown. And he's got a big, big heart. He's going to really, really be a dog that possibly, as he gets older, would make a wonderful, wonderful dog to take in to convalescent homes, to have around kids. But he's got to be older. It'll take him, when he's about five to 6 years of age, he's going to still have a lot of his zest, but he will have matured. And a lot of that maturation will be dependent on the training that you give him at this time. So this is imperative right now. He's 2 years old. He should have had this before he was a year old. So you've got to be very patient with him and very loving with him. And believe me, you've got to put your foods and snacks away, because this dog will figure out a way to open up a box of Cheez-Its and eat the whole thing, and then you're going to have a vet bill.
Right. Okay, I'm used to that. Do you think Bo, my last dog, sent this one to me?
I don't have an answer for you. I think that the request that you put out really was for an animal that was going to give you a feeling of participation in life. And
okay.
Scrappy is that way.
Okay,
and
great.
Men are really going to like him, but a lot of women are going to love this dog because Scrappy just has these beautiful eyes. The first thing that's going to grab you. And he just knows how to win people's hearts. He's
okay,
good.
Donna, you're wonderful. I'm so glad I reached you.
Oh, thank you for calling in. What did you think about our guest today on Nostradamus?
Very interesting. Never heard those things talked about him before. Like, you know, not very, very interesting.
Fascinating material. It really is.
Yeah.
Different perspectives.
Yeah.
Good thing to know about. Well, you have a magnificent evening. Enjoy your fall, Pat. And thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, dear. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. This is Donna Acebo. We're going to be taking a quick break. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Acebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Acebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Acebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Acebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
An insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, it's Donna. Telephone line, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. Well, earlier this week, I was giving out information, astrological information, according to Celtic astrology. Now, I was not familiar with this, and there's just so many people that do all kinds of research on different things. So I just think it's fun to share it with you. Now, we covered December 24th to January 20th. Those people born during that time, you're a deer. If you were born from January 21st to February 17th, you're a cat. Well, that's about all I was able to get into. So let me give you a few more signs under Celtic astrology. If you were born from February 18th to March 17th, you're an adder. Yeah, sneak. Okay? Now, a point of information, the Celtics had a tremendous respect for snakes. They admired them. They considered them a very, very powerful animal. They were beautiful, sleek, and intelligent, according to Celtic lore. Now, what this represents for those of you born during that time frame, you're persuasive and a natural communicator. You easily convince others to see your side, regardless of what their opinions or views might be. You're very flexible, spontaneous. Well, one other aspect of you that's very important is your curiosity. And that will keep you youthful for all of your life. You're curious about things. That's marvelous. That'll keep your brain active. Now, what if you were born from March 18th to April 14th? How about a little fox? I think foxes are so cute. Well, the Celts appreciated the fox, too. And like many people that lived close to the earth, they observed the animals that they made the associations with astronomically. They feel that the fox is a guide. So for those of you born between March 18th and April 14th, you have really a great deal of wisdom. And the fox as a guide is one that knows its territory very, very well and is quite alert to everything that goes around. If ever you've watched a fox, they don't miss much of anything. The fox also, as in many cultures, is perceived as a cunning creature, courageous, and obviously, again, very smart. Now, for those of you born in this time frame, the traits are manifested through your love of the unique and novel and the seeking of adventure. You're usually quite popular with people. Individuals like having you around, but you don't always let people see who you really are on the sensitive, emotional, and spiritual side. You will perhaps wear a mask so that you are perceived in one way, but it will take a very special, trusting situation to see you for really the depth of who you are as a person. And then the last one that I want to share is April 15th to May 12th, and that's for today because we've got a bunch of others to cover. And you're a bull under Celtic astrology. You're trustworthy, very, very loyal, almost fiercely so, and you're the type of person people want to turn to when they need help. You're like a rock at Gibraltar. Now, you can be stubborn. Woo-hoo, can you be stubborn? But you believe that you must have your facts and information. You believe in common sense. And you don't like it when people make bad decisions, when there's an opportunity for them to find out what they need to know before they make the decision. You're very honest. You're nurturing. You're very loving. And those born under the sign of the Celtic bull make great parents. And they're people that you can confide in. Well, I've got a whole bunch more. I've got 8 more signs to go through, but that just gives you a few, so we'll share a little bit maybe tomorrow and maybe also on Friday and finish it all out. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone number to call into if you'd like to chat with me is 888-815-9756. A couple of things I want to mention to you. If you have had a paranormal experience, won't you please take time to sit down at your computer, write out your experience, and send it to me? I'd love to hear your story. The reason being is that I have set as an objective between the now and the end of the year to reach my goal of collecting 100 stories of paranormal experiences that people have gone through, whether it's been a dream, out-of-body experience, synchronicity, I don't care, or synchronicity, however you want to pronounce it. You're important. Your story's important. Why? Because someone reading your story may have a big aha about something they're going through. And I want to put this book together because I really feel the more we can talk openly about the intuitive aspect of life, the less fear and ignorance can come in. When I was talking with our guest today and we were describing the attitudes that were prevalent in the 1500s against Nostradamus, we have the same thing going on today. People really don't change that much. We all have our own paradigms and our filters that we look at life through. And until we become mature enough to be open and responsive to saying, I wonder why they think that way, or why is it that this is there? Curiosity, if you will, but also a willingness to be open and receptive to different ideas and concepts, we often will be so judgmental that there's not a hope or a prayer of even learning anything new because, well, we know it all. Haven't you met somebody like that at some time? Very, very uninteresting individuals to talk to. But they get into their paradigms, and then they're the first ones up in line saying, well, go cut that person's head off, or that person's a witch, or gee whiz, this is it, and this is the work of the devil. And they come up with all these ridiculous phrases because they don't know what to do with their minds or their mouths. They don't understand that they need to think, but it's scary to them. So it's important that we communicate. And I, again, would love to have your story. You'll be credited in the book. And if you'd send it to me via email, I would just love it. So send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's D-E-L-P-H-I International, the whole word .com. And be sure to put in the subject line, story for Donna's book, or paranormal story, or something like that, so it grabs my attention. I'd really appreciate it. Well, you know what? We're out of time. And we're going to be back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You have got more power in yourself than you could ever imagine. Take time to be able to discover it. You may find some magic is going to happen in your life when you take the time to invest in yourself. Choose whatever level you like. You're the best investment you've got. Why not take time to give yourself the best of whatever you can? Donna Sebo here. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.